from San Francisco, California, with your host, Ben Kaspik. This is Locked On Giants Baseball. Welcome back to Locked On Giants Baseball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Kaspik, and I'm thrilled to be with you again today. On this show, we provide daily episodes, Monday through Friday, approximately 15 minutes in length, talking about the San Francisco Giants in a way that's data-driven and rational, but also insightful and easily digestible, easy for everyone to understand. To get the show every day, you need to hit that subscribe button if you haven't done so already. You can find us on the brand new podcast app Himalaya or Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Then, when you're driving to work, from work, or around town, all you have to do is tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Giants Baseball, and we'll be right there with you for the drive. If your company wants to reach an upscale male audience, then your company's ad should be running right here on this podcast. To get your company connected with this audience, email locked@lockedonpodcasts.com to get more details about increasing your business. Coming up on today's show, it is the All-Star break, so there's no game to talk about for the entire week. The Giants play again on Friday, but we won't have an episode to talk about that game until Monday. So today, we are going to work our way through the entire Giants offense, position by position, looking at the state of the team, looking at the players they've used, and talking about potential trades and positions where they could afford to upgrade. So there's a lot to cover, and we'll just jump right into it at the first position that's not the pitcher, and that is the catcher. So here we have Buster Posey returning from his hip surgery and off-season acquisitions Stephen Vogt and Eric Kratz. And then the minor leaguer involved here is Aramis Garcia, who has seen some time this year at the major league level. So the main focal point here will be Posey coming off a couple of disappointing seasons for him. How would he recover from the hip surgery and the hairline fracture that he had in that same hip? Well, the big picture is that it hasn't been pretty. He has an 85 weighted runs created plus, meaning adjusted for the league and the park and weighting all of his different offensive contributions correctly, he's been about 15% below average offensively. He's hitting just .253 with a .315 on base percentage and a .378 slugging. His defense at catcher has been really good, and so the fact that he's not hitting actually doesn't mean too much in terms of him still having strong value as a major league caliber player. Like, even if this is what we got for the rest of his career, if he can keep up the defense, then he's a quality player still, but we're definitely no longer looking at one of the top players in the game. Posey is signed for two more seasons after 2019, and then the Giants hold a club option for 2022, which will probably be declined at this, you know, if this trajectory for him continues. He's 32 years old, so the contract runs through his age 34 season. Stephen Vogt has been a very nice pickup for the Giants and someone who's contributed very well in a part-time role for them this season. I think there was a lot of hate for Eric Kratz and the performance he put up early on in the season, just because he didn't do well in 15 games that he played for the Giants. I'm not going to read into that too much. He was wanted and acquired by the Tampa Bay Rays, who are one of the more smart organizations in baseball, if not number one. Very good defensive catcher. I know he had some trouble here in San Francisco. Not much of a hitter, but that's not why you acquire Eric Kratz. He was a backup, and it turns out the plan pretty clearly seemed to be that he was just holding down that role until Stephen Vogt was healthy. But Vogt, to me, he's one of the better hitting catchers in MLB. It's not a position where the league average is very good offensively. And then, of course, Aramis Garcia, who did well in a sense. He had a, you know, he was league average offensively. He took a weird route to get there, hitting .188, .235 on base, .563 slugging. But again, we're talking about 17 plate appearances. So he struck out 47% of the time. That was the same rate as last year. So in his major league career, he's striking out 47.6% of the time, not walking at all, 3.7% of the time. And he has a .441 average on balls in play, homering on 30% of his fly balls. So we're seeing tons of luck indicators buoying the offensive performance thus far. So rightfully so, the projections are very pessimistic about Aramis Garcia. Good defensively, but I think a lot of people, whenever he gets called up or sent down, they point to the fact that he's done pretty well if you just look at the raw numbers in his major league career, but the strikeout rate, the walk rate, the in-play average, and the home run to fly ball ratio are just screaming regression. And so I don't think it's a fair argument to make. You know, the fact that he's had a little success at the major league level looks very much unsustainable. Moving on to first base, Brandon Belt, you know, has had a very strange season. He's getting on base a lot, 364 on base despite just a 236 average. The walk rate is 16%. Strikeout rate is a career low, under 20% for the first time in his career. He's 31 and signed through the 2021 season, like Posey. I do think at some point they might look to move him, but he's the last of the Giants' issues right now. I mean, he's clearly one of their better offensive players, even when he's struggling, because he's still getting on base a ton. And also at first base, Pablo Sandoval has filled in very nicely when he's played. Moving on to second base, Joe Panik, you know, the starting player there, just want to point out he had a good spring training, and a lot of legitimate journalists were talking about how his good spring training meant he was bound to have a breakout bounce back season. Not to be the case. We don't learn year after year not to read into spring training numbers. Panik is hitting .228 with a .305 on base and a .314 slugging. That's a .086 ISO, which is the second worst in the National League. It's a 68 weighted runs created plus, which is actually the same as Brandon Crawford, and that is tied for second worst in the National League. Still strong defensively, Joe Panik, but not a good runner, not a good offensive player right now at all. If you're looking across the diamond at an area where they could look to improve, second base would definitely be a spot where you're starting to feel that a change might be necessary sooner rather than later. The Giants have been hot lately offensively, but he's like the one guy. He's got to feel a little bit nervous about his job security. I hate to say it, but I mean, the writing is on the wall. His only saving grace is that he signed to a relatively cheap salary because he's just arbitration eligible. But still, this is looking like now 3 out of the last 4 years, he's going to be well below average offensively. The 1 year he wasn't, he was just barely league average. But we're talking about last year and this year combined, negative 0.1 wins above replacement, according to Fangraphs. In this day and age when power is such a big part of the game, and even at second base, we're seeing less of an emphasis on defense because of all the shifting, there's just less need for range at second base. We see guys like Mike Moustakas playing second base for the Brewers, just kind of thumpers playing second. And Panik with his .314 slugging, .305 on base, it's just not adding up to a, you know, quality production at the position. Donovan Solano, in a reserve role, has done quite well for the Giants, filling in at second and at short, especially hitting well against left-handed pitchers. Yonhervis Solarte, of course, started the season with the Giants, played some second base, and was a total disappointment. I, again, thought it was a legitimately intriguing buy-low signing. Before 2018, when he was dreadful, he was actually quite good for several seasons. So on a one-year deal for extremely low cost, a very much worthwhile gamble that didn't work out and it didn't cost them anything. At shortstop, it's just been Solano and Crawford. And once again, Solano has provided more value there than Crawford, just like he did at second base. Like I said, Crawford has the same weighted runs created plus as Panik, and that's just park-adjusted, league-adjusted offensive contributions, 30%+ below average for Crawford. So another disappointing year for him so far. He's 32 years old and signed through 2021 as well. So a lot of these Giants core players signed for just 2 more seasons and then off the books. So it will be very interesting to see what they look like in 2022 when Posey, Belt, Crawford most likely no longer with the team. But yeah, just a dreadful start to the year for Crawford. Better lately, but it's hard not to be better when he started as poorly as he did. Defense not looking as good as it used to. You know, locked up long term though, he is signed, like I said, signed through 2021, earning $15 million a year this year and the next 2 years. He has a full no trade clause as well. So he's just going to hang out and be there on the team probably unless they cut him loose, which he's not yet. It's not like they have another shortstop banging down the door. So his job security is safe, unlike Joe Panik. But once again, a tip of the hat to Solano, who has done well filling in when Crawford has been on the bench. Moving on to third base, Evan Longoria has been one of the more productive Giants players, hitting at about a league average rate, but with really good defense. So Fangraphs actually has Longoria as their most valuable offensive player so far this season, counting defense and base running. The power has been legit. He's got a .201 ISO which would be the highest for him since 2016, and just the second time since 2013 that it would be over 200. Last year, it was just 169. So there's room for a little bit of improvement because his batting average on balls in play is down at a career low. Even last year, it was 10 points higher. So if you bump that up 10 points, you would bump up the on-base percentage and the slugging would come up too. The problem with him, as I keep saying on this show, is that he's about to be 34 and he's signed through 2022. So even though he's playing better, it's still a contract they definitely wish they didn't have. Pablo Sandoval has been great as a reserve this season, batting primarily left-handed, done a tremendous job, and probably has some value given that he's making the league minimum for the Giants, with the Red Sox still paying his salary. He's going to be a free agent after the season, so don't be surprised if Sandoval does get moved sometime in the next 3 weeks or so prior to the deadline. Coming up in the next half of the show, we're going to get to talk about the outfield, which has undergone a tremendous transformation from where they were early in the season to where they are now. Okay, so as promised, it's time to talk about the Giants' outfield. Starting out the year, they had Steven Duggar in center, Connor Joe in left, and Michael Reed in right field. And this was very much a controversial start to the year for a lot of people. People wanted to freak out about this. But to me, I've always had the perspective that it's not very different than if they had Mack Williamson in left and Austin Slater in right. Especially because there was a left-handed pitcher on the mound for the first two games, and we've seen the Giants are committed to platoons. So it's, you know, Gerardo Parra would have been out there on opening day if it was a righty on the mound. And I'm not sure if they would have gone with Solarte in left and Parra in right and Duggar in center, or if, you know, Connor Joe would have been out there regardless. But Reed was clearly in a platoon because every time he barely played and every time there was a righty, he didn't play. So people really need to not dwell on the fact that they got a collective 24 plate appearances this year. Joe played in 8 games. Michael Reed played in 4. So it's hilarious that this lives on as like an infamous fact that these guys started the season. But it made sense. I've talked about it a million times why it made sense. It wasn't like that was their big plan, was that these two guys were the answer. It was guys worth trying. We just need to stop thinking about the beginning of the season as if that roster is more important than the roster at any other point during the season. It's always an evolving thing and a changing thing. And so those guys, they thought they had a chance, and I think they would have had a chance if they got more of an extended look. But then as soon as they were able to upgrade, they made the upgrade. And that's going to continue to be the case. Right now, I think Mike Yastrzemski has a chance, but if they can upgrade, they're going to do it. And upgrade for a cost that they are comfortable with. They're not going to overpay for some other player in that position, especially when they're a team that's not really contending. You don't want to hurt yourself in the long term just because you're afraid to go 1 week with guys who might not be your A number one plan, but they are guys who you think have a chance to be successful in the roles that you're playing them in. So anyway, the outfield has undergone a total transformation since that point in time. We've seen 12 different outfielders. Kevin Pillar was acquired very, very early on in the season, and Michael Reed was designated for assignment, and he's now back in the system. And he's a guy, like, people, like I said, wanted to see Williamson and Slater, but I would be more optimistic about Connor Joe than Mack Williamson, for sure. So it's kind of just a bias that fans have because they know the names. But anyway, Pillar has been a productive player overall for the Giants. He's been their second best outfielder by wins above replacement, a difference maker on the bases, doesn't get on base a lot. We always knew that about Kevin Pillar, but when he hits for power. He's got 12 home runs with the Giants. And he's been above average against left-handed pitching, so he just kind of is as advertised. We've learned that he's streaky. He went ice cold for like over a month, but when he's been hot, he's carried the team for weeks at a time. Tyler Austin was acquired shortly into the season, and he's kind of been as advertised as well. Strikes out a ton, mashes lefties, has a ton of power, and that's kind of his role. He should really only be playing against lefties, in my opinion, and he's a total threat whenever he comes up there against a lefty. Hasn't had a great season necessarily, but I think with more reps, he's just going to continue to occasionally run into balls, and that has some value. Mike Gerber made a brief cameo, struck out like every time he went up there pretty much, and then he got sent back down. But again, they get to keep him, no sweat off their back. Gerardo Parra and Yonhir Vasilarte really didn't perform well, but were fine as, you know, veterans to just kind of not hold them back from committing to youth if and when they struggled. and not be guys that they're, you know, they're not committed to some kind of long-term deal. So they were easy to move on from and it didn't hurt them in any way. Unless you really thought that they were having a great chance to compete this year, but that's really the delusional thinking of the fans and analysts as opposed to the reality of the situation, which is that they need to find players for the future. Steven Duggar, despite a lot of analysts saying he was going to be the Giants' best position player this year after like three games in San Diego, has really, really struggled on the year and is currently in AAA. He's hitting .234 with a .277 on base, .343 slugging. Looks really good defensively in center field. Thought they were wasting him a little bit, putting him in right and Pilar in center, but currently he belongs in AAA. And Mike Yastrzemski and Alex Dickerson are here now, and Austin Slater. Mac Williamson, of course, played 15 games with the Giants, 57 plate appearances, really, really struggled. Designated him for assignment again, and he was picked up by the Mariners, where he is continuing to struggle. But Yastrzemski has shown some promise, hitting for power, having some trouble right now, striking out a little too much, not getting on base enough. So that is definitely a position where they could look to upgrade sooner rather than later. But you get to keep Mike Yastrzemski, once again, just stockpiling guys with some talent, guys who have a chance to be successful without hurting yourself in the long term. Kevin Pillar, they could bring him back on an affordable salary next season. He's controllable for one more year. They have that option. If he struggles, they don't have to. If he does well, they can. So that's a good position to be in. Austin Slater has lit the world on fire since coming back up just a few days ago. You know, everything looks crazy right now. 500 batting average on balls in play, not sustainable. But still, of course, having good at-bats. So just would like to continue to see him run out there. And then the main highlight from the outfield, Alex Dickerson, acquired for Franklin Van Gerp, has been a total revelation. And, you know, he's had major league success in the past. So as soon as they acquired him, I came on the show and said, this is a trade. This is a player I like more than any outfielder they've picked up so far. And all he's done has just been incredible ever since he put on a Giants uniform, hitting .362, .444 on base, .787 slugging. But, you know, career numbers, if you look at his history with the Padres as well, you're not seeing these like unsustainable, fluky things like a 400 batting average on balls in play. You're seeing a more reasonable, stabilized performance, and he's still been 20%+ above average, especially against right-handed pitching. So it's been an evolution across the board, but they've been getting better and better. The incremental moves have worked. They've made incremental progress and improved every time. Not every guy is going to work out, but if you hit on, you know, one or two out of five tries, that is a tremendous success rate. And they're just going to continue to give guys opportunities and continue to make incremental upgrades until they're actually really good. So I'm optimistic about the state of the Giants. I do think there are a couple of positions they could improve upon and will sooner rather than later. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk all about the pitching. We'll talk about the starters, people who could be traded, Madison Bumgarner, Will Smith, the bullpen. And then later on in the week, we're going to do our best moments of the first half, worst moments of the first half, and much more. So you're not going to want to miss that. Remember, to get this show every single weekday, you need to hit that subscribe button if you haven't done so already. You can find us on the brand new podcast app Himalaya, or Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Once again, my name is Ben Kaspic. You can follow me on Twitter at @Cove_cast. If you like this show, please consider leaving a review and telling your friends and family to check us out. I cannot wait to be with you again tomorrow. And until then, we'll see you next time.